I think many of the problems are financial. You know, there aren't the resources to hire more faculty. I mean, the way to improve the student-faculty ratio is to hire more faculty, but there's not enough money to hire more faculty. The way to improve the library is to buy more books and subscribe to more journals. But nowadays, if you want to subscribe to a new journal, and there are new journals coming out all the time, you got to get rid of an old one. And the fact that it's been published for 10 years doesn't mean, you know, there's nothing left in that area. So it's very difficult to make those choices and to decide on what you're going to cancel. And what you wind up doing is canceling something that you're not using that year. Nobody's interested in using. And then 2 years down the road, you hire somebody whose area of specialization is, you know, that journal's area. And, of course, you've got to, you know, get back to that journal. And not only get back to that journal, but buy the back issues of the journal. And that's always easy to do. We've done that. One area of, I belong to the Irish Studies Committee, and I teach the Irish politics course that we have. And some years ago, I guess through the history department, we used to get the Irish Historical Studies, a very fine journal on Irish history. But before we set up the chair in Irish Studies, somebody assessed that it's an expensive journal, and we weren't teaching Irish history, so we cancelled it. Well, now, of course, we've got a chair of Irish Studies. We're emphasizing Irish Studies. The Canadian government has come in with money for Irish Studies and so on. And so, you know, we don't have that major journal. I mean, that's the major journal in history. There's Irish Political Studies as well, but that's more limited to politics. But for a study of Irish society and so on, the major journal is the Irish Historical Studies. Much broader than some, you know, Ireland's a small country. So it does have a lot of articles on the sociology, the politics, the political history. I mean, it really is a much more comprehensive coverage of various areas of Irish studies than one would expect simply as an Irish historical study. So, you know, we did order all the back issues that we had missed, and so on. Well, that was a fairly expensive project. Now, fortunately, because it was the chair of Irish Studies, money was available from the Charitable Irish Society and so on, and eventually Cyril Byrne, who got the Order of Canada for his fundraising for the chair of Irish Studies, managed to squeeze money out of various turnips around the country and did get to enough money for us to get the back issues of that journal. But see what happens. I mean, this is a tragedy in a sense that you have to do this. And we've canceled some journals. We canceled the Journal Political Theory because it's one of the most expensive journals in the social sciences. Well, I subscribe to it. I have a personal subscription. So that, you know, it's not because I'm the one who teaches political theory, so that it's not completely lost here, you know. But I've had to step in and buy my own subscription because we've canceled the library subscription. Now, I don't mind. That means I get to keep them. But
yeah.
That, you know, we shouldn't have to do things like that. But that's a question of funding, inadequate funding. And St. Mary's been very badly funded. Also, is a problem in attracting faculty to this university. You know, the Maritimes are paid less on the whole, about 15% less than the rest of the country. If you're trying to, at the moment, if you're offering jobs to political scientists, that's not a major problem. But if you're offering jobs to accountants, PhDs in accounting, that is a problem. So you wind up paying market differentials to people, paying more money to get them here so that the salary is more comparable to what they would get somewhere else. That leads to people who are already here and aren't getting the differential saying, hey, how come he or she is getting more money than I am? It leads to tensions, the problems, which at some stage are going to blow over a little bit, you know, or likely to. But it makes it difficult to attract the best to me, because even though I say, you know, it's no problem if you're offering a job in political science, you don't get the very best candidates necessarily willing to come here for less money than they could get in Ontario or Saskatchewan or whatever. The rest of the country may catch up with us. I mean, British Columbia had a few cutbacks on money, and now it looks as though Ontario wants to get people to cut back. So eventually, the rest of the country may catch up to us. But that's not a healthy thing either. I mean, this leads to bad morale, and you know, you get dispirited people who don't know It weakens the commitment to the institution, so on, if you don't feel you're being fairly treated. Very often people, you know, say, gee, you know, I'm worth more than this. It's like the Clairol commercial or whatever, you know, I'm worth it. people tend to feel they're worth more than they're being paid. When they look at other groups progressing more rapidly than they do in society, people say, well, you know, why is it that I'm not getting that? On the other hand, you know, there was a time when the university profession, or the university teaching the profession, was known for frayed shirt cuffs and collars. You know, a lot of us do it because we like it. It's a nice job. You know, to deal with young people keeps you less stuffy, I guess, than you would get if you weren't. I sometimes look at some of my contemporaries who came out of the commerce program with me, and then we've become stockbrokers and so on. I think how unbelievably stuffy they've become. and I hope I haven't become that stuffy. If I don't know, maybe I probably strike some people as stuffy and so on, because I dress with a tie most of the time. And, you know, not that many of us do that. But I think I'm a lot less stuffy than my contemporaries at McGill for the most part. So, a lot of people do university teaching because they love it. I mean, and they would do it even if they could, you know, were offered jobs at a lot more money doing something else. Sort of thing. This is what they love doing, and they're going to do it. But it's not good to pay less than people can get doing the same job somewhere else. Sort of thing. And that means you have some difficulty attracting the very best. The student-faculty ratio is a problem. And one of the problems, which is an advantage in one way and a problem in another, is this business of not having graduate students at most of our universities. It's stimulating to have graduate students, to have people who are doing research in the same area you're in and so on, and you become interested in their research and so on. We don't get that in the undergraduate institutions to anywhere near the same extent as you do in the. On the other hand, I think that's good for the undergraduate. You know, but again, it may make it more difficult to attract the really research-oriented faculty member. If you can get a job at a university which has, or she can get a job at a university which has a PhD program in the area, and you're going to have, you know, 8 graduate students doing PhDs, and wow, you know, and the alternative is a job here where you're going to have 65 undergraduate students who aren't really all that interested in what you're teaching and so on. You know, you may choose to. It depends how much teaching is important to you versus the research side. I mean, both are important to faculty members, but for some, teaching is more important than, not more important than research, but more important to them personally. I mean, what they get their jollies out of is teaching and imparting their knowledge and so on. And others aren't interested in, I suppose, anal retentive personalities or something like that. I don't know. But they're interested in, you know, doing their little bit of research and so on. And well, which they will communicate through papers and books and so on, but tend to be not as interested in dealing with people, with students. Those people are not going to come here if there's an alternative. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But it happens to be the, you know, a pattern that develops. What else? Certainly we've gone to certification. We've become unionized. I don't think that's had... Some people say that's had a bad effect on university governance, that it made it more antagonistic and so on than it needs to be otherwise. But on the whole, I've been president of this union for many years, not in succession, but at various times. And the relationships with the administration have been relatively good on academic matters and so on. The Senate makes academic decisions. When we get to money, there is some adversity, but I don't think that would be less. I mean, certainly not less at the University of Toronto, which is not unionized, and where they're having battle royals at the moment, or battles royal, I guess, at the moment over closing the School of Forestry and various other academic decisions that are being made under a great deal of pressure from the administration. And they're having their fights there too, because, and it's because of money, because of the need to cut back and so on, save money. So I don't think things would be that different. I think it's not unionization that's made the difference or certification that's made the difference. It's the lack of money, the shortage of money from the government. And the shortage of money has been due to improving economic conditions for faculty members. Let's face it, that's been part of it. But it's also been due to various other factors. The cost of journals. I mean, subscriptions for journals for the library. I mean, occasionally you get these ads for journals. Personal subscription, you know, $65 a year. Institutional subscription, $250. So if a library buys it, they have to pay $250. That's the only way that journal can survive. I mean, if they don't do it, the journal will die. I mean, if they try to even it out and have the same price, they'll sell no personal subscription. So, but that, you know, that creates problems for universities. I mean, in terms of resources, very, very difficult. So I don't think the changes that have occurred, and the tensions that have occurred between administrations and faculty are due to unionization. I think unionization emerged largely because those tensions were coming because of various difficulties. Ours were not so much financial because we came earlier. But unionization today tends to take place because of tensions, and you know, this is one way of resolving the tension. There are mechanisms in the labor relation process that lead to arbitration, to conciliation. You know, there are all sorts of things that fall into place if you are certified, which may not be there if you're not. I mean, arbitration of grievances, for instance, if you're dismissed, you know, you're dismissed for cause. Well, the cause has to be proved in an arbitration, basically a court of law. If you're going to dismiss people, because tenure is not absolute. I mean, you can be fired even if you have tenure, but only for cause. You can't be fired simply because the president says, out. You know, we have one too many professors of history or whatever. You know, one has one. You go. Or I don't like you. You go type of thing. Or I don't like your views, which is even more of a touchy subject, academic freedom and all this kind of stuff. But tenure is not an absolute protection against misbehavior and so on. But you have to prove it in a court of law, and the labor relations framework gives you a way of solving that dispute. It makes clear what steps you go through. So it simplified some of these relationships as they became constrained by lack of money. And so I'm not sure. You know, there are occasional questions raised about the effect of certification on university relations between the university and the faculty. Of course, the faculty has always looked upon itself as the university. The alumni looks upon itself as part. The students look upon themselves. But when I write to the president or something like that, I never refer to the employer as being the university. They've often come back to me saying, you know, when there's a waiver required, would you join the university in way, you know, would the union join? And I always reply, the union is prepared to join the employer. Because they're not the university. Whatever. That I'm sure of. I'm not sure who it is, but it's not them. So, I don't know what else.
Is that
enough? I mean, I don't know. I'll probably think of more things. If you think of something.